A reading from the Gospel of John. Early in the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one who Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have led him." Then Peter and the other disciple set out and went toward the tomb. The two were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent down to look in and saw the linen wrappings lying there. They did not go in. Then Simon Peter came following him and went into the tomb. He saw the linen wrappings lying there and the cloth that had been on Jesus' head not lying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the other disciples who reached the tomb first also went in, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture that he must rise from the dead. The disciples returned to their homes. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb. And she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the feet. They said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "They've taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they've laid him." When she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not know it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you looking for?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you've laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Do not hold on to me, because I have not yet ascended to the Father. But go to my brothers and say to them, 'I have seen the Lord.'" And she told them that he had said these things to her.
Happy Easter morn to you and yours. Why do we call it Easter? It's kind of an interesting story. In the 8th century, there was a scholar named Bede. And before then, they had always known it as the month of Pascha, which is the same as Passover. But he was an English monk, and in England, Esther was one of the goddesses of the ancient religions. And Esther's festivals were all in April. And so these relatively new Christians had taken those festivals and kind of appropriated them to their own ends. And Bede, but he was called Bede the Venerable because he was very old. I'm going to be Wayne the Venerable here not very long. Not because of my scholarship. But Bede brought this word into the lexicon of Christians, and it really has to do with an ancient goddess, Esther, from the Druid worship in England. Interesting. I think we'll call it Pascha from now on. Okay, if Christmas is the story of the beginning, then Easter must be the story of the end of the beginning. Right? This morning's passage is from the last of the gospel accounts of Easter. When studying the Bible, it's tempting to just kind of take it as one book, as one group of writings that were done together, but that is just not the case, is it? The earliest writings of what we call the New Testament were begun around the year 50-ish. The last writings of the New Testament were probably not written until around 100. So there were almost two full generations in the writing of the gospel messages. And Mark is the first, and John is the last of those. So these words we heard this morning were from the church after it had been going for almost two generations. Listen to the words of the first gospel that was written. Reading from Mark 16. And when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, bought spices so that they might go and anoint him. And very early on the first day of the week, they went to the tomb when the sun had risen. And they were saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the door of the tomb?" And looking up, they saw that the stone was rolled back, for it was very large. And entering the tomb, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, dressed in a white robe. And they were amazed. And he said to them, "Do not be amazed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you to Galilee. There you will see him as he told you." And they went out and fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had come upon them. And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Now there are some other verses added, but they were, the editors have figured out they were added much later. You know all of that stuff about handling snakes? Okay. That was written well after then and added to these passages. But the last word of Mark was, "They said nothing, for they were afraid." So at this writing, the church hadn't progressed enough that the full story was being told. There are discrepancies in the story of resurrection. How could this possibly be? Well, I think it's really miraculous that it makes any sense at all. For you see, this was way beyond the writer's experience, was it not? Nothing had ever transpired like this. So it's not surprising that in one place we see Jesus telling Mary, "Don't touch me because I haven't ascended yet." And yet he tells Thomas to, "Here, touch my side and feel these prints of the nails." And in one place he walks through a wall. In another place he eats a piece of fish. What's going on there? This was beyond their experience. And they were trying to figure out how to fit it into their picture of reality. They were not expecting resurrection, were they? They didn't go to the tomb to witness resurrection. They went to the tomb to minister to the body of Jesus because they couldn't do it earlier because of the Sabbath. The disciples returned to their homes. But Mary Magdalene was persistent. You know, Shirley pointed out, Shirley is our secretary. I work for Shirley 4 days a week. And we've been holding Shirley in prayer. Her beloved Don passed away a couple of weeks ago of a 57-year marriage. And Shirley came back to work this week. She needed to. But she pointed out a detail in this passage that I simply hadn't noticed. And I've been at this a long time. When Mary asked whom she thought the gardener was, where they had laid him, she told him, "If you will tell me where he is, I will go and take care of him." Not "I will go tell the others," but "I will go and take care of him." This is the earliest instance of female equality in the church. It happened less than 24 hours after the resurrection. In the earliest formation of the church, women were leaders. They were leaders in the churches that Paul wrote to because he listed them in some of his salutation. All this nonsense now of male headship in the churches is an add-on much later because we guys thought we could do it. Silly boys. That's as close to political as you're going to get, I think. Mary recognized Jesus when he said her name and not before then. For you see, religion, again, is about being tied to, right? Ligare, ligament, religion. Religion is about relationships. It's not about memorizing doctrine. It's not about lighting the candles in the correct order. I think we lit them backwards today. I should do something about... Religion, at its finest, is about relationships. Not only that, Mary Magdalene was the first evangelist telling the good news to the disciples. Wow. So the question is, what do we believe? What is this? What is the meaning of all this? I heard one of my seminary professors, he was a professor of theology, and he was slightly crazy, in a good way, but slightly crazy. And the first day, he strode into the room, and he said, "There are only three possible answers to the question, who is Jesus?" Oh, really? He was either a charlatan, a lunatic, or he is who he says he was. There can be no other. I hadn't thought of it in those terms, had you? If he was a charlatan, there were lots of messiahs pretending at that time. He might have been a better miracle worker than the rest of them, but he may have been just pretending. Or he may have been truly insane. But if he were not one of those two, he must be who he says he was. And that professor said that to counter the notion that Jesus was simply a good man, a good teacher in the line of other good men and good teachers, but certainly not the risen Son of God. You can't have it that way. You have to pick one of those three. Well, for you and me showing up here, it at least says that we are seriously considering the third, right? Okay, just wanted to clarify that with you. First of all, let's just talk about life for a minute. How much time I got? Oh, I've only got 4 minutes. That'll be plenty of time. There is an eternal nature to life itself, isn't there? Think about it. I want you to recall your fondest memory from as long ago as you can. Can you recall that memory? Wow, it came to life, didn't it? It is still alive. There is an eternal nature to those memories that we carry with us. There is an eternal nature to the pure genetics of life, right? I am a new great-grandfather. Whoa. And I looked at little baby Troy, and it was a stamped copy of little baby Alex, his daddy. Genetics didn't take a holiday. I hope that genetics can bend a little bit in the psychological acting out in life, perhaps. But Alex is turning out okay now. But there is an eternal nature. You look at your parents and your parents' parents and go back, and there is an eternal nature to that. We are part. In Hebrews it says, they look back over the streams and they saw the banners of the witnesses gone before them. And we are like that. We are a part of that eternal nature. But there is a real eternal nature in life. I believe in that we were created to be in relationship with God. So I do believe there is an eternal nature to life. Second thing I believe out of this is there are barriers, aren't there? But barriers, and we say, you know, when you're dead, you're dead. That's it. That barrier cannot be broken. Why? For a long time, the sound barrier was an absolute barrier to humankind. We couldn't go faster than the speed of sound because when they tried it, the airplanes flew apart and you just couldn't do it. Until one crazy ace pilot, Chuck Yeager, got in that X-1 and flew faster than sound and lived to tell about it. That barrier was broken. What barrier are we talking about now? Well, of course, nothing can go faster than the speed of light. Well, I want to tell you this. The Starship Enterprise has already done it. Barriers are only barriers most of the time right here, are they not? Yeah. Something else we must consider, and that is what the Apostle Paul yelled out. He yelled out, "If Christ be not raised, then all of our preaching is in vain." A truer statement was never uttered. He was right. If Christ be not raised, then all our preaching is in vain. However, I would posit to you that life has an eternal nature to it. That you were invited here, and I don't mean just who invited you today, but you brought yourself here. You were invited by God to explore that eternal nature of life. But our amazingly audacious acclamation, every decent sermon has at least one alliteration toward the end. I want you to mark that. That wasn't bad. But our amazingly audacious acclamation this day is, "Alleluia, Christ is risen."